This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Good morning, and thank you, Lyle, for sharing with us those thoughts about shaping hearts. Yesterday, we were recognizing that God's instructions to us is at the top of the list are to love Him with all our heart and to love our neighbors as ourselves, and recognizing that as teachers, one of our primary responsibilities is to direct the hearts of our students toward God. And we have daily opportunities to teach them how to love each other, how to give themselves for the good of others. We also noted then that our kind of insidious, constant problem is to replace God, this problem of idolatry, of putting something or someone in God's place as our ultimate love. Today I want to turn our attention toward a lesser subject, the subject of technology. I want to focus especially on how technology has affected our lives, the impact of technology. Now, overall, we are looking at the age of the iChristian. I have not yet gotten to the iChristian. I hope to get to him eventually. But we're looking at the impact today, and this is difficult. Whenever I think about trying to understand and evaluate our times, the impact, the effects of our times, I realize that it's hard for us to do that. And I think of a story that you may have heard before, but in 2005, David Wallace gave the commencement address at Kenyon College, and he began with this little story that I rather enjoy. He said, "Two young fish were swimming along one morning, and they met an older fish swimming the other direction. And the old fish said, 'Morning, boys, how's the water?' And the two young fish kept swimming, and a little later, one of them turned to the other and said, 'What in the world is water?'" It is a lot easier to think about, understand, and evaluate surroundings that are not familiar to us. Other cultures, other eras. We can look back on former times and we seem to be able to evaluate them better and understand impact, understand movement, when we're looking in the rearview mirror. We become so accustomed to our times, our ideas, our ways of doing things, our reasons for doing things, that it's hard even to understand. But we need to try. And so today I would like to think about the impact of technology. Our world is changing. It is changing rapidly and radically. Occasionally, when I'm driving on interstate highways at 70 miles an hour, I try to imagine what the place would have looked like that I'm traveling through 200 years ago. And then I think about how neat it would be to be able to transport an early American pioneer or a Native American into my vehicle. The vehicle itself, the speed, the smooth ride. Well, in Pennsylvania highways, not always. What was it? For 10 years in a row, they voted, the truckers, I think, voted Pennsylvania highways the worst in the nation. but they're working on it. At least the signs say that they are. But back to our traveler, sitting with me, riding along at 70 miles an hour, what's he thinking? If it is summertime, there's air conditioning, cool air blowing on him. If it's wintertime, there's snow and ice outside, but there's warm air and we can travel comfortably in shirt sleeves. And then I turn on a music CD. Where are those voices coming from? And my wife is sitting in the back seat and her phone rings. It's our son. He's living in Ohio. And so she puts it on speakerphone so that I can hear too. And after that call, her phone gives another signal, and it's our grandson. He's using Snapchat, and we can actually watch him as he's talking to us. Our visitor has turned white and green and probably all the other colors of the spectrum. Must be spirits at work. Meanwhile, the GPS is giving us our speed and our direction and our ETA, whatever that is. And my wife then is playing a Scrabble game with some friend of hers who's not there. Then about that time, the alarm goes off on both of our phones. There's a severe weather alert. And after that, my wife checks the news. And she says to me, "Did you hear that President Trump canceled Putin's visit to the U.S.? I said, no, I didn't know that. A little later, she says, "Oh, he says now that's fake news. Putin is coming after all." Changes. Back in 1970, Alvin Toffler wrote a book called Future Shock. I remember hearing about the book back then, didn't read it until more recently. Fascinating. He talks about changes and the effect of change on our culture, rapid change, and he starts out by talking about changes in transportation, and I put here a quote from him. I project it so that you can follow this, but he says, "For centuries, the fastest transportation available to man over long distance was the camel caravan, averaging 8 miles per hour. It was not until about 1600 BC when the chariot was invented that the maximum speed was raised to roughly 20 miles per hour. It was probably not until the 1880s that man, with the help of a more advanced steam locomotive, managed to reach a speed of 100 miles per hour. It took 58 years, however, to quadruple the limit, so that by 1938, airborne man was cracking the 400 mile per hour line. It took a mere 20-year flick of time to double that limit again. By the 1960s, rocket planes approaching speeds of 4,000 miles per hour, and men in space capsules were circling the Earth at 18,000 miles per hour. Plotted on a graph, the line representing progress in the past generation would leap vertically off the page. Whether we examine distances traveled, altitudes reached, minerals mined, or explosive power harnessed, the same accelerative trend is obvious. The pattern here and in 1,000 other statistical series is absolutely clear and unmistakable. Millennia or centuries go by, and then, in our own times, a sudden bursting of the limits, a fantastic spurt forward." When Toffler wrote this, there were no cell phones, no laptop computers, no smartphones, no CDs, no MP3 players, no GPS devices, no drones, no computerized carburetors, no high-definition TVs or projectors, no endoscopic surgeries, no social media. There was no internet. And incidentally, last summer, when I was doing some research on this, the spacecraft Juno was traveling toward planet Jupiter at the speed of 165,000 miles per hour. Our world is changing. It's changing rapidly. I'd like to trace some of this change and think about the impact then in a number of arenas. Most of these I can only give a rather cursory overview, just recognizing and illustrating it, just recognizing that there's much that is changing and it's hard to keep up. And some of the things that I even talk about may be outdated as I talk about them. But thinking about just tools and machines, how much change has happened in your lifetime? Mine even more so. I go back to the Middle Ages somewhere. Manual labor is fast disappearing. We employ labor-saving devices in virtually all areas of our life. Machines bake our meals, wash our clothes, clean our floors. Machines work our ground and harvest our crops. Machines take us to work. Other machines do our work. We have to learn how to push the buttons, of course. Change. Carpenters today rarely drive nails with hammers anymore. They've got these air-powered guns. We still use pens and pencils sometimes. But the typewriter is a machine of the past. It went out with numerous kinds of tape players. Change. Maybe more significantly, the area of communication has changed. Back in the 1960s, when Barbara and I were dating, that's the 1960s. We lived 1,000 miles apart. That's a long ways by camel. We rarely saw each other. So our method of communication was mail, not email. We wrote letters and wrote letters. Over the course of the 2 years of our courtship, we both wrote over 200 letters. It took 3 or 4 days for a letter to travel from Ohio to Minnesota. And by the way, at that time, if you think about 200 years before, that was a marvel, how fast we could get letters back and forth. Today, of course, we have cell phones, email, texting, instant communication. Well, at least for some people, it's instant. My wife is a dear lady, but she gets frustrated at me sometimes because she sends me a text, she sends me an email, she WhatsApps me, and I still don't respond. I have an unfortunate habit of being absorbed in the task at hand, and I don't notice things beeping around me or in my pockets or wherever my phone happens to be. I'm not a multitasker. I do one thing, and that's what I do. My wife is a woman, and I'm told they have bigger corpus colossums. I'm not certain if that's the right way to say the plural, but because my spell checker reacted when I put an S on it. But anyway, that's the connector between the two halves of your brain. And ladies, just in plain words, they're more connected upstairs. Okay. they have bigger ones. You knew that, ladies, didn't you? But anyway, my wife can multitask. She can be talking on the phone and still point out to me what I'm doing wrong in the kitchen. And she's got three different pots of things on the stove at different stages of hot, and she can do it all. It's going on, but I'm not that way. So she doesn't understand why, when I'm studying or reading a book, I can't connect with something else. But it is a long way back from Middle Earth to Guy's Mills, Pennsylvania. So technology is changing the way we communicate. And it changes the way we communicate in a variety of ways. Again, the instant messaging, the texting, the ability to connect with each other. We have come into an era where when we can't get a hold of somebody, we get irritated. When we can't get a hold of them immediately. And again, I'm an older guy, and I think back, and I'm thinking, boy, what did they do when they didn't have email and so on? And they got along somehow. Were able to have relationships back then. People in the same house text each other. Sometimes people in the same room text each other. Maybe even at Teachers Week. I don't know. And with that, we get almost a new language. Recently, my son texted me, and there were three capital letters, I, D, K. I knew they meant something. My son is reasonably intelligent, but I racked my brain trying to think, what would this mean? I'm doing calisthenics? That's spelled with a C. I thought about texting him back, I-G-U, I give up. Then we have new words as well. Words that we've come to accept and use: selfie, fax, smartphone, unfriend, texting, emoji, techie, iPhone, iPod, iPad, iMessage, and now iChristian. Question is, of course, especially for us as teachers, what do we do with this new language? Now, the new words do actually come in. I remember a couple of years ago noting that in the Oxford English Dictionary, they had accepted unfriend as a new word, as a new verb. But do we resist this shortened spelling? Do we accept it? Our English language is rather hopelessly complicated in its spelling, and so maybe simplifying it would be better. I'm not much for that, especially some of the abbreviations. I'm an old codger, and so I'm just suggesting that you, as teachers, stand with me here, resist some of this. Especially, so if a student turns in a paper and it has IDK on it, you might just say you don't know what it means and say, but an F means flunk. Communication is changing. I'd like to think now about entertainment. Just throw a number of statistics at you here. 2008, 56 million Americans were playing video games. In 2011, 3 years later, there were 135 million. I think that's close to 40% of the population. In 2005, there were 1,000 gaming companies. In only 2 years, that rose to 18,000. In 2007, every minute, there were 8 hours of video uploaded to YouTube. By 2011, that had increased to 48 hours uploaded every minute. In 2002, there were 693 million music purchases. By 2010, that had increased to 1.5 billion. Now, I am going to note here that these statistics are actually quite outdated. I could have looked to see how they have become updated, but the point here is more increase. The reality is that is an incredible amount of increase in the use of electronic media for entertainment. And so how do we think about impact? The impact is actually difficult to quantify, and statistics don't actually help us here, because the impact of entertainment is not just in time spent or money spent, it is on the shaping of the heart, and how do we quantify? But many years ago, the Apostle Paul wrote a warning note to Timothy, young mentoree. He says, in the last days, perilous times will come, for men will be, and then he gives a list of many things and concludes the list with this one: they will be lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God. How do we think about the impact when a nation becomes lovers of pleasure? Technology has made entertainment available by, I don't know what to say, the boatloads, the truckloads, available at your fingertips. Back in 1953, when I was a year old, George Gallup gave a speech at the University of Wisconsin. It was the dedication of the new communication center at the University of Wisconsin. And he said this: one of the greatest threats to the freedom of the world is the citizen who wants to be entertained rather than informed. I understand that they put a sealed copy of his speech in some vault, and they were going to open it, and I don't remember how many years later, but they're going to open it just to see kind of how significant this was. As I said, I was only a year old, but this speech impacted me significantly. Sorry. Let's go on. In his comments, he said, this country can go so heavily toward entertainment that we may literally kill ourselves laughing. Now, I want you to note here, we don't have the whole speech, but I want you to note here that Gallup's concern was actually not, at least stated, not a spiritual concern. It was not the spiritual impact of entertainment, it was the intellectual impact. He was concerned that the emphasis on entertainment, the movement toward wanting to be entertained rather than informed, would make U.S. citizens less thinking citizens. That was his concern. He says nothing about the spiritual dulling that may happen. He doesn't quote the Apostle Paul that it is dangerous when people become lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. But if this is true, if Gallup is accurate in his assessment, and we understand that Paul is accurate in writing about the times, then we're saying that one of the greatest idols in this time would be pleasure. One of the greatest replacements for God would be pleasure, where people turn their hearts toward pleasure rather than toward God. Another area of change in our time is information. We live in the information age. Knowledge is increasing in virtually every area of study, whether we think about physics, engineering, biology, cosmology, medicine. Information is increasing. Eric Schmidt, who was CEO of Google, former CEO, said every day, every 2 days, we create as much information as we did from the dawn of civilization until 2003. I don't know if that's an accurate statement or not, but if it was on Google, it probably is, right? Information. When we want to know something, we have multiplied sources of information, literally at our fingertips. There's Google, there's Bing, there's Alexa, there's Echo and Echo Dot, Hey Siri, Wikipedia. We can go to so many places and get information. I want to think with you about impact. When I was taking writing classes as a young man in a local college, one of the significant emphases was you need to learn library skills. And I felt, I was scared because I didn't know what all they were talking about, all the indexes and so on. And I would go to the library and I hate to ask because I feel ignorant. But they encouraged us, said, no, ask. That's a good thing. That's what the librarian is there for. And I learned to kind of take down some of my fears and ask for information. And I learned how to use some of these indexes and the periodical, how to find articles and so on. And today, it's all online. One impact of the information age is overload. How can a person process all the voices shouting, all the possible angles of an argument, and each one claiming to be the highest authority? You start checking, getting information, whether you have an illness or a problem with your car, your vehicle, or whatever, and you can get all sorts of opinions. Overload, constant bombardment, and we can access it so easily. Another impact is what is known as the leveling of authority. We used to, when we wanted to really get good advice on whatever it was, we'd go to the expert. And today, we go to the expert, but we question him then. And then we go home and we Google it. We check it out. We look at it ourselves. And trying to be a doctor these days, or sometimes a teacher, can be a bit frustrating because people check you out and they counter what you say. I checked this out. Oh, by the way, I did make a mistake yesterday. That was James Smith who wrote Desiring the Kingdom, not James Sire. If you put that in your notes, that was James Smith. One of you good teachers pointed that out to me. Leveling of authority, we all kind of are on the same level. We can check it out. And another impact then is misinformation. Because there are so many voices, many of them can sound authoritative when actually they are not. And you may have experienced this frustration with me, but there are people who will take an offbeat position on so many different kinds of issues, and they know. They know because they checked it out. They found it on the internet. An authority. I mean, this person has got more degrees than all these other people, and this is what they say. And the frustration where people are actually believing things that are misinformation. It's twisted. So much available. Whether it's politics, health fads, medicine, theology, conspiracy theories, people can back up their position by authorities. This brings us then to the arena that we all care about. We care about it significantly, the area of education. All this information that is available, changing the possibilities of access, it creates questions for us as teachers. And here are some of the questions. Should we supply students with computers and teach them how to use them? Or do we resist that and give them books and say, learn it this way? Is it okay for sources in students' research papers to be mostly online sources? Or should they be holding the material in their hands, looking at books and magazines and so on? Can we increase educational opportunities for students by offering online classes? So especially if we're a small school and we don't have enough personnel to teach all the classes, well, is it okay to do some online classes for students, expand their educational opportunities? How much should we allow students to draw from Wikipedia? How do we teach them how to evaluate sources? Are students becoming less educated if the focus shifts from gaining information toward how to find and evaluate information? So do we continue to have a body of knowledge that all students need to know, or do we simply teach them where to get it? Do we teach them how to work out problems, math problems, or do we teach them how to punch the buttons to find the answers with calculators that are faster than their brains? These are questions that we face as educators. I'm thinking here in this talk not so much of answering the questions, but just understanding the impact. We're faced with these issues. These are things that we have to think about. There is also then, behind all of this and kind of involved in all of this, is the changing in processing. I purchased my first computer back in the dark ages, early 80s, I think it was. And here is an advertisement, projecting it for you here, but I just want to explain it for you. This is an advertisement that talks about the first computers, and it says, it's quoting actually from Popular Mechanics, the big letters that you see there. Popular Mechanics, this ran in 1949. Computers in the future may weigh no more than 1.5 tons. Okay, that's encouraging. It's an advertisement for a laptop that is actually very clunky. Okay, this advertisement I saw in U.S. News and World Report probably 15 years ago. And it's the computer, the laptop that this guy is holding there says that this little thing actually weighs only about 5 pounds. Okay, well, today we have the lighter things. And again, when I first started out with a computer, actually, I didn't purchase it. It was a man in our church who told me, he said, you do writing and editing, and that's what I did for my living. He said, there are word processors now. And I had no idea what a word processor was. I didn't know if I wanted a machine writing my materials, processing, producing. And but I began inquiring and thinking and looking at this, and then he said, I'm going to buy you a computer. And so he bought me a computer. It had a dot matrix printer then that I purchased for this thing. I don't know if you know what a dot matrix printer is or not. Mine came without an automatic transmission and no power steering. Anyway, my computer had a 256K processor. Kilobyte is 1,000 bytes. Megabyte is 1,000 kilobytes. Gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes. And of course, now they're going on to terabyte and petabyte and so on. But this thing didn't produce any words. In fact, well, it did sometimes. It mostly said bad command or file name or something like that. Today, I carry a phone. Well, I don't now, right now, but I have a phone that I carry with me, and it has, what, a million times more processing power than that clunky thing that I first used. Changes. Rapid changes. in 1916, that's 2 years ago, is a team at the University of California that produced a microchip that had 1,000 independent programmable processors. In a report in Science News, they said the energy-efficient kilo-core chip has a maximum computation rate of 1.78 trillion instructions per second and contains 621 million transistors. Pavan Vass, who led the team in producing this microchip, said, "The kilo-core chip executes instructions more than 100 times more efficiently than a modern laptop processor." Now, all of that is, in many ways, almost meaningless. To some people, they understand what those things mean, but impact, that's what I want to think with you about. What is the impact of this incredible shift in processing power? For many of us, the impact is very simple. Wow. We're amazed by speed. We're amazed at efficiency. I can do my banking on my cell phone. I can remind myself to pick up milk on the way home. Of course, I have to hear the ding, or it just gets me in trouble. But normal people find those things helpful. I can take a picture of a plumbing problem that I have, a connection that is leaking. I take it to the hardware and I show them and they tell me what I need. I delete the picture. I can use a music program to write music. I can do so many things with computers. Things I hold in my hand. We're amazed also by novel things we can do. So I can take a picture of myself and I can make myself look really, really weird. Okay. I can record myself and change my voice to sound really, really weird. And spend time with my friends laughing about these novel things. I can get an app that shows the position of the stars, even in the daytime. All I have to do is change my phone to like this and it shows where the stars are. I don't know why I need to know that, but it's novel. Wow. What is the impact? What is speed, efficiency, connection, novelty, amusement doing to us? That's the question. What's the impact? How is it affecting us? And so a number of sobering questions. We can do so much so fast. Why do we have so little spare time? We've never been more connected to so many people. Why are there so many lonely people? We are so mesmerized by trivia. Are we taking time to contemplate the big issues of life? We have so much fun. Is it robbing us of joy? Our attention is so tuned to beeps and dings and flashes of light. Are we losing our ability to concentrate deeply? We have constant sound. Are we comfortable with silence? We know so much. How to push the right buttons so that our passenger from 200 years ago is blown away. But unlike him, we have no clue what phase the moon is in. How to read the signs that it will rain tomorrow. What direction is north? Impact. I want to bring you back to what Jesus said. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.